Hi, everyone. Welcome to Bill and Jerry's excellent podcast, aka Spilling the Career Tea. We're really happy today to have our guest, Nicole Dubois. Nicole is the Chief Human Resources Officer at Graham Wyndham, formerly known as Graham Wyndham, rebranded as Graham.
There you go.
We just had this conversation. Nicole, it's so great to have you here. You and I know each other. We've worked together in mentoring programs, and you've done so much for career development for so many students at different universities. So it's great to have you here. Welcome. And why don't you introduce yourself a little
bit? Hi, Jerry. Thank you so much for having me, Jerry and Bill. So, Nicole Dubois, I'm originally from New York, and I live in Jersey. And yes, I've been with Graham for just under 19 years.
Awesome. So we're going to get right into it because you have so many great stories and you have such an interesting career path. I want to put out there that you have a book on Amazon called Unparalyzed, which I read, and it's a great read. So if you're out there and you want to know more about Nicole, feel free to pick that up. Bill, let's start it off.
Awesome, Jerry. Thanks. Nicole, welcome and thank you. And Jerry and I are going to team up here to get all these great experiences and stories. You know, I think a lot of what we've talked about is under the topic of sort of getting started, mm-hmm. right? You know, we've talked broadly about this podcast series is going to be about career readiness, right? Obviously, you got to get started, right? And so maybe tell us a little bit about how did you get started thinking about what you wanted to do and perhaps what you didn't want to do in career?
Fine question, because I love talking about careers and getting started, right? So I grew up with my mom, and my mom was a registered nurse. And what I remember about my childhood and my mom talking to me about careers is that she wanted me to be a nurse. Hmm. And being a nurse is a solid career. My mom did it for about 35 years. Solid career, great pay. That's what she told me. The only problem was I didn't want to be a nurse.
That's a problem.
Because what I said to her was, I don't do other people's bodily fluids. I just can't do it, you know. I mean, I have my own blood drawn and I pass out. So it wasn't for me. But what I did know is from a young age, relatively young age, is that I wanted to be a helper. So I remember being about 12 years old and I volunteered at a nursing home. And, it wasn't on the medical side. I remember some like funny stories about that. There were happy hours, you know, for the residents. I may have helped facilitate arts and crafts classes, but it wasn't so much about working with that population. There was just something in me from a very young age that knew that I wanted to help. And so in high school, I took an elective in psychology. And I said, oh, I got it now. I'm on path to be a therapist. That's what I want to do. Graduated from high school, and I went to Fordham University in the Bronx, where I was double major in psychology and urban studies. So, I thought I had it all planned, and I had a path mapped out. The only thing is that the psychology program at Fordham was very science-based, and science and research piqued my curiosity. Mm. So there was something sort of tugging at me. So it was like, you know, there was one way I could kind of pursue a career that was about helping, which was therapy. But then this thing about research was tugging at me. Mm. So I actually, after graduating, started working in substance abuse research. It was still helping, but helping in a different way, because sure. we were examining the efficacy of substance abuse treatment programs for public assistance recipients in New York. It was fascinating work. It was fascinating work. And I was in that work for about 4 years. At some point, I decided I should go back to school. And so I actually applied to programs, including NYU. And that's where I ended up going, enrolling. And I obtained a master's degree in mental health counseling. Do you see the zigzag? The helping and thinking yes. about being a therapist and stepping, you know, sort of sideways to get into research. But then I went back for a master's degree in mental health counseling.
Right.
conventional wisdom might tell someone that maybe I graduated from my master's program and started as a therapist. The only thing is that isn't true.
That didn't happen. So what happened?
So what happened was from the research experience, I learned about child welfare in New York, about foster care, about, you know, families that unfortunately have a need, right, to be supported by the child welfare system, either in foster care prevention. And I heard about this organization, Graham Wyndham. I'd never heard about it before. I went on Idealist and I found an opportunity. And the opportunity was actually more research related. It was in quality improvement. And I spent a lot of time when I started in the role doing a lot of data related work. The idea
when was that? How long ago?
This was in 2006. It was almost forever ago, is what it feels like. It will literally be 19 years in June.
Wow.
And so I started working in a role where we were examining the efficacy of our interventions and of our programs, and just collecting lots of data and writing reports for our board of directors for funding sources. A lot has happened since then, including that I was paired with extraordinary mentors. I had the opportunity to learn about the inner workings of a nonprofit organization, working on stretch assignments, working with teams outside of the team that I was working for, including working with HR. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I remember when I first got started in HR, I was asked to actually partner with HR to help them to identify evolution in sort of their recruitment strategy, right? Ways to refine and improve their recruitment strategy. So I would partner with them, I would work with them until ultimately a boss that I had said, you know what? I think the role that you have and I think all of the experiences that you bring in terms of organizational skills, your data orientation, your, you know, sort of vision, would actually work well in HR.
Sure.
And so literally we took my role that was outside of HR and plopped it over into HR. Wow. That was in 2012. And I had, there was a lead of HR at the time, an associate vice president, who I worked with until 2014 when that person transitioned from the organization. And that mentor, who was like the CFO and a senior VP, a very senior executive at the organization, he said, you know what? I think you're ready. And I'm like, ready for what? But he literally saw in me what I did not see in myself. And he told me to apply for that job. And so I did. And the rest is history.
For the head of HR.
For the head of HR.
Wow. Yeah. You know, you in that discussion you just had with us, I think you've described, right, what we're trying to get out of these discussions around what we're calling career readiness. But I want to go back.
Yeah.
Was your mom okay that you weren't going to be a nurse? What did she say?
I remember when I told her I was going to major in psychology, she literally, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but she was like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
You know, I think she and I joked just a couple of years ago, because now I'm, you know, of course, the chief human resources officer, where in my role, I have a head of HR, you know, that reports to me. I have learning and development.
Sure.
And then I have a team that helps organize our organization's internship program and volunteerism work, onboarding and a whole bunch of other things. Right. And so I was saying to her, it was about two years ago. It all worked out, didn't it?
Did she say yes?
She did.
She's okay with it now.
Maybe not at the time, but she's okay with it now.
So you talked about the internship program that you run.
Sure.
Tell us what you look for in interns that are just starting out and maybe in the same place you were, not really understanding or knowing what their career is going to look like.
That is exactly what I look. What you asked is what I look for. I look for curiosity. You know, is one thing. And a lot of the interns that we happen to place at Graham are in programs that specialize in social work or human services, right? But that's not, that's not exclusively the cohort that we place. I place interns in human resources, in central administration as well. But curiosity is one of the things that I think is, universal, a universal characteristic and attribute. you know, folks that are sort of interested in learning, open to learning, you know, demonstrate, you know, flexibility and adaptability and curiosity. I can't say curiosity enough. You know, that's something that I think is incredibly important.
Yeah, those are skills that are unique. Doesn't have to be HR. And I, as you know, I spent 40 years in HR myself, right, yeah, at Citi in the financial services area. But the skills that you're mentioning and the curiosity, it's applicable to any career
Absolutely.
Path, right, along with passion and everything else. And so how you, when you see that person,
yeah,
you know that they're right for your firm?
I do. Sometimes it's in the questions that they ask.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we talk about that a lot for interns that are interested in placements with us, but even for, you know, candidates for employment. Literally, that's one of the key things that I recommend interviewees for internships, for even volunteer opportunities, right? That they are prepared with is, you know, what questions do you have? You know, what makes you interested in this? You know, it tells me that maybe you've done your research, you've really started at least to think about, with the help of peers, with the help of mentors, you started to think about, you know, whether or not this is the right fit or what you may need to know in order to sort of be ready, right? And so those are some of the things that tell me, yes, this person's probably going to be the right fit and someone who's interested in learning and growing.
So do you feel like that's a universal characteristic that HR people may be looking for? Is that limited to just you, or have you discussed that with other colleagues?
That's a great question. I have discussed it with other colleagues, and yeah, I would say it is a universal characteristic. You know, there are folks on my team that one of the greatest joys of my career is watching folks on my team grow and develop. And that's a two-way street, right? Because I enjoy being a coach and, you know, supporting someone in navigating and negotiating their sort of career trajectory. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of that, what I need is someone that's open to that and that is actually, you know, co-creating with me as their coach, you know, sort of a plan for advancing or for, you know, growing, right? And so that is something that you can't, it's hard to teach, right? It's something that's like inside, right? It's something that I look for in my 14-year-old. You know, what is his, is he curious? You know, what is he interested in learning about? And for him, he loves, he loves science. And I see his eyes like open up and I'm like, oh my goodness, I want to sort of like fuel that. And so that is something that we look for. And it's something that I've heard colleagues mention as well.
Yeah, if I added the word passion to curiosity, sure. What is, because you've already told us that do something you're passionate about. It wasn't going to be nursing, right, for you, as you've already told us, right? But to what extent do you think being passionate about what you want to do, even if you're not sure, plays a role in getting ready for career?
I think it's great to be able to find a career that aligns with your passion.
Right.
I think that, you know, I think about my son that's at UConn now, mm-hmm. University of Connecticut,
great school,
and he's an economics major. The reality is one of the things he's passionate about is playing the guitar. He mm-hmm. loves it. In fact, we just went to his jazz concert wow. up at UConn in Storrs over the weekend. For him, pursuing a career in his passion isn't necessarily, you know, realistic, mm. right? At least for him, right?
Okay.
There are tons of people that pursue careers in music, and mm-hmm. that's just quite fine. I think that loving what you do can happen even if it's not directly aligned with your passion. Loving what you do, you know, can sort of be connected to a few factors. It might be that, you know, the job that you're in or the career that you're pursuing is it allows for a certain level of flexibility, mm-hmm. allows for your creativity to, you know, actually be tapped. It might provide the type of financial stability that mm-hmm. you're interested in. And so all of those things might be the reason why you love it, mm-hmm. you know, even if it's not directly aligned to your passion per se, mm-hmm. right? But I think that if you can find, you know, a job that does any or all of those things and it aligns with your passion, score, right? You know, that's
a great point.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a great point.
Did you always love what you do or in your...
I never loved it. Until
you never
today.
Loved it.
Today, I love it.
Today, you love it?
Yeah. But that's just because I like you guys.
No, but it's a very important point right. around the
no,
distinction.
Of course.
You know, loving it versus right. passion, whatever.
As an attorney, I was able to be a lot more creative and figure things out. I bought real estate and I would redevelop the real estate. And all the while using my skills as an attorney, but had a very creative side that made me even better at what I did. And I loved doing that part of the work, mm-hmm. but the other part of it paid me more.
Right.
So I just sort of blended everything together and I had a job that I liked doing because there were all these elements that I enjoyed.
Right.
Yeah, which we've, you know, we talked about a little bit in our introductory podcast, but Nicole, I'll ask you the question that we thought about, right? You're going to get paid more or you're going to enjoy it more? Which one do you defer to?
Jeez.
As you think about career. There's not a right answer here, but what do you think?
I think that's the thing. I don't think there's a right answer, and I think that it can shift. The answer to the question can shift. Mm-hmm. It is not sort of off the wall to consider that as someone is getting started, right, to the point of, yep. You know, your opening theme, that building some sort of financial nest egg, you know, building some sort of financial foundation might be the priority for some. Right. And then as time goes on, maybe because other priorities, you know, sort of come into play in life, family or whatever. Right. A change or a pivot in passion mm-hmm. or in what matters. Mm-hmm. Right. Then maybe making, you know, more money isn't the thing that matters most. Maybe flexibility
sure.
is the thing that sort of takes precedence.
Yeah. And career is an evolution. Right. So I wanted to jump back to your beginnings because we know where you are and we know what you do today. But when you graduated from Fordham,
right.
where were you? What was your mindset? What did you think you were going to do? Because you did a lot of exploration after you graduated.
I did a lot of exploration and I wouldn't change a thing. But when I was at Fordham, I, because of this sort of helper in me, this innate helper in me, I remember interning at a drop-in shelter with a homeless population. Mm-hmm. I remember my real first job that I only did for 3 months, right, was as an early intervention service coordinator. Huh. So I was doing direct service. I had a caseload of about 40. I was making home visits. And I said, yeah, this is not for me, right? It was grueling. It was sort of work that I felt was impactful. And it was grueling to a certain extent for me because I had 40, you know, kids on my caseload. I had lots of paperwork. And, you know, it just wasn't the right fit. And I think that was completely fine because going through that experience allowed me to recognize that that wasn't the right fit for me.
Sure.
And what actually happened is that before I started in that role, I applied for another role, which was the substance abuse research role. And just at the right moment, as luck had it, they called me. When I was realizing that the first job wasn't going to work, that first job called me. And they were ready. And it was a phenomenal opportunity. It was I was working on a study that was funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institutes on Health. And I mean, it was a role where we had months to just do nothing more than plan. I remember sitting in a conference room in Midtown, and what we were doing is thinking about our interview questions and how we were going to recruit study participants. And, you know, actually, that involved going to a job center on 16th Street, you know, to literally be in a space where we could, you know, try to entice people with granola bars to come and talk to us. But it was such fascinating work. And I got to talk to, you know, folks and to learn about a topic that I didn't really know that much about, which was folks that were affected by substance abuse, right? And were navigating myriad life challenges. But I loved it. I also got to learn about analyzing data, analyzing qualitative data. I remember using this software called InVivo, where, you know, it would take our sort of recorded interviews and literally help us to detect themes. And so I absolutely love that work. And I think all of those things, those experiences that I described, have conspired to, you know, sort of open up my perspective to first of all, groups that I'm interested in having an impact with. Even though I'm a CHRO, I'm a CHRO for a mission-driven organization that happens to have a mission that I care a whole lot about,
right?
And so all of those earlier steps, I think, you know, have all helped prepare me and you know, for the role that I have now. And it was unexpected, 100% unexpected that that was what was happening, you know, at every step along the way.
Yeah, I think what you and I know this because you've told us this, right? Your belief is, and I happen to agree with you, careers are not linear.
That's right.
So if you're a student out there watching this podcast today, right, you don't have to have it all figured
That's
out.
Right.
But let me probe a little bit and say, is it just luck or is it a journey, or is it a combination? And if you think about your own journey, right, not linear, you've told us that, but there are some themes there that have directed you to perhaps where you are today, right? What would you say to a student out there just about to get started? How do they kind of manage that journey?
First of all, push past fear and try something. You're not going to break, you know, your journey, especially in the very beginning. Just try something, right? And so, you know, I know, for example, my son that's at UConn, he's a junior. He, you know, very fortunately has a fantastic internship lined up for this summer. But prior to that, he was stressed. I mean, stressed. I mean, a level of anxiety that actually I was concerned about. And we were saying, take a break, you know, worst case scenario, you can come home for a little bit. But I, you know, literally, I have learned, and yes, it took me time. And I know that, you know, there are students right now that are like, okay, but, you know, you're 20 some odd years, you know, into your career, so you don't know what I'm going through.
Right.
But I was there, and I know something to be true, which is that I took that first step. I took that job that wasn't like the most, you know, it wasn't, definitely wasn't like my dream job necessarily, but it was a job and it was a solid opportunity. And in trying that job, right, I learned what worked and what didn't work and what was a fit and what wasn't a fit. And then it only prepared me for the next job, right? Because I learned about being a professional, showing up on time, you know, responding to directives, working with people. So there were a number of skills that I developed even from that job that was not ultimately the right job for me. And so by the next job, you know, I was cool.
And let's put things in perspective a little bit, because
sure,
we live in a crazy time right now. Lots going on in New York City especially. And while I was reading your book, something jumped out at me that I thought could be really useful for students today. And that was that when you were a junior at Fordham, the planes hit the World Trade Center on September 11th. Now, what must you have felt like being on campus in New York City during that time? And how did that change you, influence you? How did you use that fear, if you had any? I'm sure you did. How did you use that to sort of direct yourself to take chances or do the things you needed to do?
Yeah, no, thank you. First of all, thank you for reading the book. I was a senior. I was a RA. I was a resident assistant, and I was in a freshman dorm. And I remember being in class that morning when our professor, you know, received, you know, sort of a notification and that there was an emergency. And I can almost like picture the day like it was, it just happened. I remember leaving the class and walking across campus, and I wasn't really sure exactly what happened, but there was just something in the air or in the sky that just didn't feel right. You know, it just felt, I just felt this feeling in my gut that something was not right. And on that day, I was terrified, you know, especially as I learned more. But what really mattered the most was being there for my residents. And so I had, you know, my residents on my floor all come into my room, and they sat on the floor with me, and we were watching my little tiny television screen, watching the news, just, you know, to try to understand, you know, all of what was happening. And so it was absolutely a moment of crisis. And still, you know, even though I personally was scared, what I wanted to do is to make sure that my residents were okay. And what I take from that is, as a leader, really, sometimes who we are in a moment of uncertainty or crisis, you know, it sort of becomes more pronounced, I suppose. And being sometimes the calm in the midst of a storm is sometimes what's needed in the moment. And so I carry that, you know, through each part of my journey, you know,
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, you could fast forward to the COVID experience with students today that are trying to figure it out, right? And to the point, it's not easy, but the leadership, that the calmness, the it'll be okay, right? Yep. And I think a lot of students think about that today, right? It's a tough time, or how am I going to get started, or, you know, what advice? I mean, there's so many topics that we'll get to, but when you think about even distinguishing yourself in an interview, you do a lot of interviewing, I'm sure, right? What advice would you have for students today, or early career professionals that have just graduated, distinguishing themselves in these environments? What do they need to do to crush the interview, if you will?
Absolutely. So a couple of things. First of all, I am like, you know, a champion for networking.
Yeah.
A champion for networking.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to say it again, right? And so networking is king for landing the interview.
Absolutely.
One of the things for landing the interview. I remember being at an event at a university in Jersey, and a colleague of mine who has been in his career for 20-odd years, he mentioned to students that he's never applied for a job, right? And it was because of the power of his network, right? So that's one thing. And I would say that once, you know, you land the actual interview and you have an interview schedule, it's really important to prepare.
Yes.
And so if I have a, you know, an interview candidate that, you know, comes for the interview and it's clear that they have studied, you know, what exactly this role is, and, you know, they know something about our organization. Our organization's pretty cool. I know I'm biased, but but we were an orphanage 219 years ago, and one of our founders was Eliza Hamilton.
Yeah, you know, is pretty cool.
And it is pretty cool, you know. And so if someone comes to the interview and they've taken a moment, you know, or maybe more than a moment, but to go on our website to learn about us,
of course,
that tells me, okay, they actually, you know, care. So that's one thing. I think that practicing for interviewing is really important as well. And so leveraging the network might, you know, actually be helpful in this. Because if you are practicing your responses to interview questions, one of the things that you're able to do is build confidence. you know, about how you show up, your body language. Mm-hmm. Are you making eye contact? Are you actually being directly responsive to the question that's asked? Mm-hmm. That's really important, so that the interviewer has a sense that you are good at active listening. And also, if you're prepared, one of the other things that ends up being a benefit is that you're prepared maybe even for curveballs. Because if you've actually taken the time, you're not just showing up to an interview winging it, and a question hits you out of left field, you know, hopefully you have more of a sense of calm,
sure,
you know, in those moments to be able to be responsive in the question. So I think, you know, preparing is absolutely essential. And something that it will never get old, it will never get old, is following up afterwards. I still.
You mean like with a thank you,
with
you mean,
a
or what?
Thank you yeah. note.
What are you
absolutely.
Saying in the thank you? What do you, what's
you
your advice?
Are, you know, addressing the interviewer, the hiring manager, directly. First of all, it's not canned. You're not creating like one, you know, sort of thank you note and then sending the exact same thank you note to every employer. We can tell.
Yeah.
But you're customizing, you're tailoring your note to the person that interviewed you. You're saying, you know, thank you, Jerry, you know, for this conversation.
Sure.
You know, here are some key takeaways, you know, from the conversation. And, you know, maybe you're saying something about your interest in hearing more about next steps in the process.
Sure.
So it shows your interest. It shows that you were paying attention, you know. And so I think that is another you know, point of advice that I would share.
You know, one of the things Jerry and I have kicked around with other discussions, I'll ask you as well, is it okay if you're the interviewer that the interviewee is stalking you on LinkedIn and has some insight about Nicole? Some students have said they're a little reluctant to do that. How do you feel about that?
Stalking is a little bit creepy.
Yeah, stalking is, stalking is quote unquote, right?
Stalking is creepy, but research is good.
Yeah.
And so I actually enjoy that. You know, I'm heavy on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I have a heavy presence on LinkedIn. Love it, you know. And to the point of networking, yeah. I mean, it could be because you've actually landed the interview, you're actually connecting with someone or researching, you know, who they are on LinkedIn. But it may be even recommended that you reach out to professionals at an organization that piques your curiosity,
mm-hmm.
and ask them for a coffee chat, a virtual coffee
sure.
chat. People reach out to me all the time, you know, and I'm one of those people that actually responds, you know. So I had one yesterday that is a student, you know, a student from NYU, which was my graduate school, reached out and was like, you know, you were at a panel, mm-hmm. which I was a couple of weeks ago. Really enjoyed, you know, some of the insights that you shared.
Yeah.
Would you meet with me for 30 minutes? I was like,
absolutely,
sure.
Yeah.
I had someone else that reached out that was in the Marines for 20 years and is just sort of pivoting into a career in human resources and wanted to chat. So I did that one too. So you never know. There's going to be somebody that might respond. But yes, absolutely, in prep for an interview, I think it's a good idea.
As a mentor, it goes back to something you said, but what you're doing is you're building someone else's confidence,
mm-hmm.
by saying yes. And we all need to realize that that's what's going on out there. And confidence is king, right?
Yeah.
Confidence equals career readiness. So what you've done is even bigger than having a coffee chat, giving some guidance and support. You've built confidence.
Yeah.
I love that. That makes me smile, the way that you framed it. In fact, I mean, I do coffee chats certainly with current Fordham students.
Yep.
And I had one that reached out to me on Ram Connect, which is a phenomenal platform. I talk about it all the time.
For mentoring and
connection. It is how I reengage with the Fordham community.
Sure.
Quite frankly, you know, I mean, I connected with Jerry on LinkedIn and then learned about this Ram Connect. And I'm like, oh my gosh, right? Created my profile and students reach out to me all the time. And one student that reached out to me on Ram Connect, we did one of those coffee chats, those virtual coffee chats. We exchanged contact information, and she's kept in touch. She texts me, right? And so the other day, she texted me about a TEDx event at Fordham's business school and invited me. She was like, well, you know, we haven't met in person. Would you come? And she was telling me at the event, because we sat together and then we did the reception where there was opportunity for networking. She told me how inspired she was by how I networked, right? Because I was speaking to some of the TEDx speakers, and she was asking me, how did you start? I said, just the way that you're starting, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
And so she was, I really loved that experience and loved that she felt comfortable enough to reach out to me as a resource and want to be there for her as well as other students.
Well, that's a great segue into our next segment. Let's bring in a mentee who's also on RAM Connect, and let's talk a little bit about mentoring.
A student, right, yeah.
Right.
And see what her experience is. I think that's great. Let's do it. We'll continue.
Okay, great.
Let's do it.